Hi, I'm Marty Duda, and welcome to Sound Thinking. Today, we've got Andra Jenkin reviewing the new album by the Jesus and Mary Chain, 40 years after they formed. Graham Reed is here with the lowdown on the new one by Kaylee Bell, our Kiwi country star in the making. And we have Veronica Bell is going to bring us the lowdown on Delaney Davidson. And we're going to finish off with Chris Warren. He's been listening to Adrian Lenker's new album, who also is in Big Thief, I believe. So we'll get started with Andra, Jesus and Mary Chain, 40 years after they formed. Do they still have anything relevant to say? Should we be listening to this new album? What's it even called?
Hi, Marty. Yeah, it's I think much is going to be made of the fact that, like the infamous Gallagher brothers, William and Jim Reid play excellent music together but find it really hard to get along.
Right.
So they kind of infamously fell out at a concert in front of an audience, but reformed in 2007. And I'm glad they've set their differences aside for Glasgow Eyes, which is the name of the album.
Right.
I can comfortably say that Jesus and Mary Chain fans are going to love it. They've clearly declaring their Scottish origins with Glasgow Eyes. Fans are going to get it. They'll feel it. They'll understand it. You know, there's kind of emotion in it. And I'd agree with the bio that this album will extend the Jesus and Mary Chain story, but feel simultaneously like a return to roots.
Yep.
It's like it's an electronica album with shades of the original punk vibe. It almost opens as like a rave song that quickly evolves into Britpop, transitions into a driving rock song, and I use a lot of qualifiers, like it almost, it sort of, it feels, because it's like this sneaky little animal that keeps slipping at genre.
Right.
Like it's shoegaze, it's Britpop, it's new wave, it's electronica, it's punk, it's psychedelica, like just yes, all of the above.
Right.
It gets really hard and heavy at times, but it's got this slower, drawn-out tempo. And then there's kind of these deeper meanings in the lyrics. You know, the monkey's organ grinder isn't grinding anymore, and I can't shake the feeling that I've seen this dream before. I really enjoyed it. But it's got hooky riffs and power chords and experimental noises and the floaty feedback of psychedelic rock and the fuzzy guitar sounds you'd expect in punk.
Yep.
The Britpop rock sound is kind of really present in Jam Cod, which is named after the band itself, the GAMC. And this one's a favourite for me, so let's have a listen to Jam Cod.
The monkey's organ grinder isn't grinding anymore, and I can't shake the feeling that I've seen this dream before. Fucking up and then falling down, but it pops nailed to the door, and I can't see the ceiling, cause I'm face down on the floor. Tears are what you want, tears are what you've got.
Yeah, there's a toe-tapping groove to like Jam Cod and Silver Strings particularly. The drums appear down in places and drive in others, but they're not fancy or the star, despite the fact that Justin Welsh is doing them, Suede fame, sorry. There's still a rebellious punk element. There's led by the instrumentation, particularly bass and guitar. Scott Van Riper is the Australian guitarist, and he founded the Black Rider. And Mark Crozer, also on guitar, whose side hustle is the Jet Setters. There's some kind of vulgar lyrics that's a bit punky, and songs that are lyrically complex. It's like there's a lot going on in there, melodic, harmonic, but new wave. This is like lackadaisical kind of bored delivery with spoken word and whispers and occasionally even monotone.
Right.
American Born sounds a bit like Tom Petty or Iggy Pop's I'm Bored, like a punk on heroin sound. You know, sort of lethargic but determined. Whereas Pure Poor is like moving underwater. There's like this feeling of drag and inertia and depression and long drawn out words that feel like synesthesia, you know, like continuing the tradition of Misfits making happily tortured noises to make you feel all emotional. So I think for that Venal Joy is a good one. Have a listen to that.
You got a kid and a girl, but you don't have a future. I know you like to be cold, but it just doesn't seem.
Okay, that's Jesus and Mary Chain, Venal Joy, from their new album, Glasgow Eyes. Andrew Jenkins is telling us all about it here.
There is really clear and present references. Like, they name check heaps of other bands, like The Fall and Echo and the Bunnymen, The Beatles, The Eagles, CCR. Like, they've just chucked everybody in there.
Right. Well, I see there's a song called The Eagles and The Beatles.
Yeah, there is.
And it's about the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. I mean, and even Scarlett Johansson's done backing vocals for them at Coachella.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Man,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, she sung Just Like Honey with them in 2007. I was like, what? Like,
not bad for a couple of 60-year-olds.
Yeah. I feel like the more I listened to it, the more I loved it. Like, you know, you're sort of head nodding to each song. It's really rhythmic. And then it's really elusive. It's really hard to describe it because it's sort of heavy and tranquilizing at the same time, you know?
Right. And I like the way they've adopted Lou Reed. The last song is called Hey Lou Reed, but they spell it like they're Reed, R-E-I-D.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Like brothers, you know, another brother. I think one of my personal favorites, like the overdose of Downer's floaty out of body experience, I think is most obvious in Chemical Animal.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, have a listen to Chemical Animal. I think that fans will listen again and again and again, but I think it's hard to pin down or describe.
Well, I've spent quite a bit of time with it myself because I had the opportunity to talk to Jim Reed last week, or a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember how long it was, the guitar player of the two brothers, and it's up on the 13th floor if anybody wants to listen to it, but he was very easygoing, and he was like, yeah, nowadays we just get in the studio, we put all the stuff that we do to each other behind us. He mentioned the gig that you talked about where they broke up on stage, and he was like, oh, that could have gone better. but the sound is great on the record. He says, we just go into the studio and just see what happens. And we know it's going to sound like the Jesus and Mary Chain, and that's, we're not trying to, you know, change the world or anything. I liked a song called The Second of June because it had to kind of, with the Lou Reed thing in mind, kind of a droney Velvet Underground-y vibe to it. But that's just me. Graham, what did you think of it?
Well, what I liked about it was Chemical Animals is that really stood out for me. I just thought, well, this is fun. You know, it's so self-referential. You know, Jim, one of the brothers, has been, I don't know if he's still a junkie, but he's had a lifelong habit. And all those sort of references to other bands. And I thought, oh, this just sounds like a bit of fun in a way. I would take it seriously if I saw it live, because I think they would really pump it up. I've only ever seen them once live, and it was, you know, it was as I expected. It was deafening, and it's like concrete had just been poured straight onto your face. You know, it was great. I just really liked it. But it was just some of the lyrics in this thing that really got me. I just thought, you know, these guys are pissing about. They're actually enjoying being in a rock band at their age. And I don't have a problem with that, as you can tell.
Veronica, what do you think? Since you're about a third of their age. And you just had a birthday, didn't you?
Happy birthday. I did. Thank you. Look, I got to be really honest. I just started a new job at a law firm and I have not had an opportunity to listen to this album this week. But I'm really, really interested in that song that you were saying. What did you say? The Eagles and the Beatles, but it's about the Rolling Stones?
It's all about the Rolling Stones.
Listen, that sounds amazing. I can't wait to go listen to it. I'm so sorry to be of
Use, that's cool. It's got a big, nice guitar riff in it too, which I enjoy. All right, we'll skip over to Chris then. I have a feeling he might have listened.
I have.
Yay!
It's a good record. It sounds like another Jesus and Mary Chain record. Exactly. It's not going to attract anyone new. It's not going to turn off anyone who's already on the ride with them. But I feel like it's got a lot of signs of life on this record. It feels a bit more vital and current. The last album, Damage and Joy, which came out probably 5 or 6 years ago.
7 years ago.
First one since they reformed. that one had a few unfinished ideas from before they broke up and old demos. So they were kind of rehashing and finishing old material. So this album is the first kind of new Jesus and Mary Chain record in my mind.
Cool. Well, good on them.
And they pulled it off.
Sounds like everybody is grooving to it, and hopefully they'll come back in, because I've seen him, I think, twice at the Power Station. And you're right, Graham, it's exactly as advertised. But listening to Psycho Candy, they played Psycho Candy all the way through once, which is one of my favorite albums, and I was in heaven. So if they do that, that's good enough for me. All right, Graham, so let's move on. We got Kaylee Bell has a new album out called Nights Like This, and Kaylee's been bouncing around for years. And suddenly she's like a country superstar, almost, kind of. What do you think, Graham?
Well, yes, I think she is. We can take out the word almost. I think she's really has made it in the Antipodean realm, let's put it that way. How big she is in Nashville is another matter. We can't be sure about that at the moment. But just before we talk about it, because, you know, she does make Nashville country, I just thought I was just reading this book, and it was talking about how in the early days, and we're talking 100 years ago now, records were catalogued in record shops. And the way they were put into record shops was by catalogue number. They didn't put them into jazz or folk or country or anything like that because, first of all, the genres were not big enough. And secondly, that's really not how people were thinking about music back then. You know, they were just accepting music as it was. It just came at you. Can we dance to it was the question, you know. So if it's a folk song or if it's a jazz song or what we might call, you know, nascent pop, you know, as long as you could dance to it or enjoy some aspect of it. So, you know, this idea of, you know, the divisions between all these genres has become more and more prominent. And it's really, I mean, it's just a taxonomical device, isn't it? You know, you put people in a category and that's helpful. You know, if you like Jesus and Mary Chain, well, you know, you might sort of, oh, well, there's a whole shoegaze category over there or noise or alt rock or whatever you want to call it. And I've been thinking a lot about this because, you know, the way those genres sort of define how we think and our preconceptions. And it struck me that if you put alt or indie in front of some catalogue, it suddenly becomes more important. It's sort of like, oh, it's up the totem pole from, well, yeah.
Serious.
Oh, this is serious. It's intellectual. You know, it's the one that's going to get critics going. And the example you could give is country music. If you say country music to people, people have a certain preconception of what that is. If you say alt country, that's something different. Well, I think we need to be very clear about Kaylee Bell here, that she is very much Nashville country. Now, if you don't like Nashville country music, because it's generally very polished, it's big backbeats often, it's mainstream popular country music. If you don't like that, Kaylee Bell does not have an album for you. There's nothing alt country about this at all. And in fact, it is so Nashville country that she adopts the language of Nashville. She talks about something, well, we hear it in one of the songs, the water tower. You know, like we can write our names on the water tower. Well, what does that mean in this country? It doesn't mean anything.
I know what it means.
Goddamn water tower outside. Well, actually, near your place, Marty.
There's a huge water
tank. Yeah. But it's not that water tower that kids climb up in the movies and fall off or, you know, have affairs up there. So she's adopted the whole argot of Nashville country music. And I think she's done it enormously successfully.
Mm-hmm.
She's a collaborative person, so she lives in Nashville now. So that's exactly where she needs to be. Because, you know, that's a climate where people do collaborate. Studios, producers, songwriters collaborate. I haven't seen the credits on this album, but I do know that there are a number of collaborators with her on a number of songs. So, you know, she's played her ace into the Nashville country scene. I genuinely hope it works for her. She's on tour here at the moment, and by all accounts, it's working for her here. So I just thought, let's play a couple of these songs because they are very much in the, yeah, block your ears, Chris, if you don't like Nashville country, but because here it comes. This is called Good Things.
Something feels different, it's all gonna change, and all of the pieces just fall in.
That's new music from Kaylee Bell, Good Things. The album is Nights Like This, hardcore country music from a Kiwi.
I don't know that hardcore is what we would say about it, but it is core country. We can say that. The next one I thought I'd play is Small Town because, you know, one of the things that country music loves more than anything else is to play off its own myths. And, you know, where does country music sell the most? Well, it's actually an urban audience for it. Urban people seem to like country music more than the people in the country like it, because those people in the country, a lot of them are not listening to Nashville country. They're listening to a different kind of country, an older kind of country, not even old country. So this Nashville country sound is very much for a more sophisticated urban audience that wants to go down to Vector Arena and have a really great night out and then get an Uber home and go back to the suburbs.
That's exactly right.
I mean, not going to go down to the local bar and drink Bud Light or whatever and then get in a fight and whatever. So this song, Small Town, celebrates something that an audience really likes, and that is Small Town.
It's a one red light town. Those back roads are ours, and we got our names up on that water tap. Some things round here, they don't ever change, like waking up and working hard and knowing when to chase down those good times. Flying down the road under the moonlight to the place we always go, where the bonfire high meets the stars in the sky.
And I think it's called Small Town Friday Nights, isn't it?
Small Town Friday
Nights. You can't
beat
that. I think John Cougar Mellencamp would approve, even.
I mean, that would be one of our reference points, wouldn't it? You know, when he was John Cougar Mellencamp, possibly more than John Mellencamp.
Well, Johnny Cougar.
He was Johnny Cougar before that.
Johnny Cougar. Yeah, so I'm kind of making the case for her in as much as she has delivered what she wants to deliver. And that is a stack deck of country songs which will have wide appeal. There's an interesting kind of within the genre of Nashville country, she's managed to tick off a few little boxes. There's a very fine ballad on there, and when I'm writing about it, it's a ballad that could be a country standard from now on. I think it's a really clever, clever piece of writing. But the last one I want to play is called Life is Tough, But So Am I. And this strikes me as rather different. It's got New Zealand songwriter Navi, who doesn't live here anymore. She lives in London, I think, these days. But this is just something very different. It's not, it begins in a way that you go, oh, well, that's not Nashville country. It kind of gets yep. there, though. And so it doesn't, it won't offend the Nashville country people. But what it might do is might make them think, ah, well, you know, here is somebody who's got a few other strings to their bow, and it's a really good piece of music. So this is Kaylee Bell. What do you say the album
is called? It's called Nights Like This.
Night Like This.
Yeah, Nights Like This. Yeah, and this is the track, Life is Tough, But So Am I.
You have bad days, you might make mistakes, you just get back up. Yeah, in the end I'll make it, and everything will be just fine. Cause life is tough, but so am I. So am I, so, so am I. Yeah, life is tough, but so am I.
Cool, new music from Kaylee Bell. She's also got an Alanis Morissette cover. Did you notice that?
Yes, she did. Yeah. And it's a well chosen
good
one.
Yeah.
Too,
what is it? Yeah. You Learn. Yeah. Which it's one of those songs where, wait a minute, I know that song. And then it kind of all comes together. And speaking of the 90s, the song she's got called Boots and All remind me of Shania Twain quite a bit.
Yeah, that's oh,
yes. yes. Yeah.
Speaking of ticking the boxes, yeah. I think that's a big one.
And we're not going to argue with
no,
Shania.
No, I would never.
No, hell no.
The heels she wears? All right. Andrew, what do you think?
Well, I'm definitely one of those people who cringe when they hear country.
Right.
But my dad taught me there is good and dross in any genre. And, you know, Jolene's Country is hell, but it's arguably an excellent song. And I've got to disagree with Graham because I freaking loved it. I was dead set shocked. I should hate it, but I absolutely don't. I'm like, it was infectious. It's really, it's optimistic. It's danceable. It's hooky as fuck. I mean, it,
yes. yep.
you know, it's sort of almost country disco pop in some ways.
Well, that's what Nashville country is these days.
That's Nashville
yep,
country.
That's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And it's got this beachy summer vibe. It's really anthemic. You know, I'll be so unsurprised if it becomes absolutely huge. I have no idea.
Well, I saw a guy from JB Hi-Fi at a show last night. He said it's the biggest selling record in JB Hi-Fi this week. It's just flying yeah. out of the stores.
It's so. Wild.
Completely unsurprised.
And Veronica, tell us what you thought of it. Be honest.
I loved it, honestly. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, I'm so unashamedly super that pop gal. I love that stuff. I love the cringe. I love everything about it. I love how dancey it is. I like how it sort of gives me a few country pop crossover divas in every kind of song. Like, as Marty said, like there's some Shania, there's some Dolly in there. There's 100% Taylor in there. Like, it is so undeniable.
I was wondering if we could get through an episode without mentioning Taylor.
I'm sorry. She's the most famous person on the planet right now. I mean,
I'm here for it.
That in itself.
Yeah. And we're talking country
that in
music.
Itself is,
yeah.
I'm talking about, like, I don't know, Fearless, but like with better production. Like, I think it sounds so full. It sounds so rich. I really like that track with Navy. That hit home, yeah. I think. But I mean, the title track, it's really important in my opinion for a title track to like encompass a whole album. And I feel like Nights Like This is perfect. Like, it perfectly, if you were to listen to one song from the album, I think it perfectly gives the soundscape, it gives the like lyrical content, it gives the hookiness, as Andrew just said, like 10 out of 10. I want to go buy the record. I'm a fan. Like, she's cool as fuck. She gonna be famous. She gonna get a Grammy. Watch.
Yeah, when she's singing, she sounds so American, and then you hear her introduce herself on The Voice and you're like, oh no, definitely from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Chris, how are you feeling about all this?
Well, I was surprised with how strong my feelings of dislike towards this album were.
There you go.
So I appreciate it.
Interesting.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate Graham's take, like the cultural analysis of where this sits. And I mean, I would agree. It hits that box of poppy Nashville country. So it's achieved its objectives. But I mean, I'm no cultural expert, but I felt like the amount of cliche Americana lyrics would just bat me over the head you know, motifs of bar stools and cowboy boots, pickup trucks on the highway, honking for freedom, America. Like, it was overwhelming. And the production drove me crazy. Right. I thought the production was really high. Technically.
Me too.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, Chris, continue. Well, no, I love this. I love this.
Technically perfect, but lacking in soul.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
It felt like, you know, and maybe this is a Nashville country thing here too, but the big 80s snare drum just built to reverberate through a stadium. And there's all these little hot country blues licks, like they got like a session musician who loves Joe Satriani to just play a perfect little lead, but it's completely lacking in character or soul for me. So it felt, this is the most surface level sounding record that I've heard in many years.
There you go. All right.
It hurts me to say that because I boost the Kiwi artist, but I really struggle.
No, that's okay.
That's great. Chris, I agree with you. You know, it does, as I said, it ticks every box. It ticks every cliche. In a way, lyrically, it certainly does, and in songs, it certainly does. But you know, all I'd say in her defense in that case is that, well, welcome to Nashville, because that is Nashville country. What you're looking for is alt country.
Quite right. Quite right.
There's this idea that there's less importance placed on, you know, music that's girls having fun, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think there has to be a deep soul to every song, to every album. Like, this one is a bit of a throwaway summer thing where you're having a good time and hanging around by a campfire or whatever. You don't have to be, you know, moved to emotion every time. But I can see, like, bachelorette parties dancing around their handbags for this
before. Oh, absolutely.
What I have said about it is that she makes the familiar sound as if she'd just discovered it. And I think that's a good thing, you know. It's very familiar, but bang, she's into it like that. And let's face it, you know, it's been, 15 years since she's been, you know, moving in this direction. She's been up and down to Nashville. Now she lives there. She understands the inner workings of Nashville.
All righty. Well, we got another Kiwi artist who's a little bit country, or has been from time to time, Delaney Davidson. He's got a new album called Out of My Head. And Veronica, I believe Delaney's kind of new to you, isn't he?
Yes and no. I have actually come across him before. I watched him perform at the Wine Cellar a wee while ago.
You can find him there, yep.
Yeah. I do apologize.
Often with Marlon Williams.
Somehow.
They used to be like the Everly Brothers in New Zealand a long time ago. But we'll get into it. Yeah.
Really?
But anyway, so give us the lowdown on Out of My Head.
I was expecting to really hate this, because, look, I really appreciate the difference between – sorry, this is going to be super shady. I really think that there's a difference between a live artist and, like, a recording artist. And I don't think necessarily one means that it's better than the other. I'm just saying there are some people who sound better live, and I think, in my opinion, I think this is the case of Delaney here. So anyway, Out of My Head, I'm just going to read a little bit of the press release, because it also helps me with, you know, all the collabs and stuff. So it's his 10th solo studio album. And it says, what does 10th solo studio album mean to a man standing on the precipice of 50 as his touring world territory crossfades into his house and backyard? And I actually really like that. I think that's a really I think that's a really interesting way to kind of frame the album. And it says that it was presenting songs that have been written over the global pandemic lockdown period, when he was sort of, when Davidson was trying to navigate, you know, personal, political landscape. And he seems to kind of feel really at home in that and really wants to sort of relish that. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of rage and despair on the record. I think that there's a lot of like yearning and tenderness. And it's got a whole bunch of really interesting collabs for me. Like, okay, so the co-producer was Mark Perkins. And it has guest appearances from like Marlon Williams and Reb Fountain. And they had these references to Tammy Nielsen, Marlon, Troy Kingy on here. He had notable co-writes with people like Sam Scott, obviously Marlon Williams, Miranda Easton, who's amazing, Hayley Westenra. Like, come on. Like, you know you're in for some serious musicianship when she comes on board, you know. So, I really want to start with the opening track, which is Out of My Head and is also the title track of the album.
Friends started pushing me all around. Never going backwards when you're up to the wall. I was out of my head, knowing I would never get the things that they said. Take me to the desert to look at the stars.
All right, that's the title track from the new Delaney Davidson album, Out of My Head.
Yes, well, look, I thought that there were really lovely synths in here. I felt like it was reminded me of a little bit of Bowie, a little bit of, you know, Alt-J kind of relaxer, the earlier sort of period. I felt like there was a lot of great pop hooks, particularly, you know, Out of My Head, Floating Like a Galaxy, that's starting to spread. I do feel like overall the record, for some reason, given the amazing collaborators that are on the record, I was hoping for the instrumentation to just be a little bit more punchy. I felt like there was something really lacking. Like, I felt like maybe there could have been a deepness to the drums, I think. But, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I really like the album. I also really liked... I've written here about You Drive Me Wild featuring Marlon Williams. Yeah, so I think it would be rude to not play that one.
We don't want to be rude. That's the last thing we want.
No, absolutely not, because it's a great track. It's a great track.
Give it a spin. That's Delaney Davidson with Marlon Williams. Kind of got a 50s vibe to it, a kind of doo-wop-y thing, which I find, I'll just throw in my two cents and I throw it back to you. Marlon's a little all over stylistically wise. I've heard some garage rock and some glam and all sorts of things.
I wrote here as well, I said sort of, why is this giving me Arctic Monkeys but crossed with Rolling Stones' Brown Eyed Girl? I swear that even in the delivery it sounds really similar. 1950s ? And then I said, for a Marlon Williams feature, I'd like to have had more Marlon. Like, I can't really tell who's singing. But that being said, though, I think that there's a lot of praise to be given in a musician and a singer as well that can not mimic in like a derogatory way, but is able to match like the stylistic patterns of the voice that they're singing with, and that can happen. It's happened with other artists before, so that's really awesome. But I still would have liked to have heard him more. I can't really tell if this was a Delaney Davidson song where he wrote it first and then decided, oh, I want a Marlon feature, or whether they actually wrote it together. And I don't know. I would have liked to have had that been a little bit more obvious, which I the track with Reeb Fountain was amazing. Honestly, it felt like a little bit of Lana Del Rey in there with her singing specifically, and then like a bit of Johnny Cash. There were these contradicting harmonies that really kind of solidify that level of discomfort. And I think that this is, becomes a pivotal theme in this album. Obviously, having written this during lockdown and during the pandemic period, you know, there's clearly a lot of feelings about the Great Reset sort of vibes. I'll leave that up to you. I love the instrumentation on this track, though the lyrics seem a little bit overdone. Like in terms of overdone, I mean, some of them were a little bit obvious for me, but I don't mind that. Okay. You know, it kind of also gives you like a familiarity with what you predict is coming next, so it kind of inherently makes it a little bit more catchy. The one thing that I did note on this album, the sibilance wasn't, I don't know why it wasn't taken out when they were editing it in post, because you're hearing a lot of like, and for me, I found that really irritating. It's like white noise. It could have been so avoided. So I'm interested to know whether that was a stylistic choice, because, you know, Delaney, when he's live, he's really, you know, he's in the ebbs, he's in the flows, he's in that flow state moment. So, you know, it could have been a stylistic thing for him, but honestly, it was driving me mad. Please, baby, please. Honestly, I said, the lyrical content on this track just wasn't hitting for me, unfortunately. The delivery is super cool and the guitar still should be a little bit more punchy. That's something that I wrote as well. I would have liked the guitars to have been a little bit more forward in the mix, personally. I felt like, interestingly, for like a, I don't really know what genre this is. It's kind of like rock, country, poppy, oldie.
All of them.
all of them. It's like, I think Delaney has his own genre. I know it sounds weird, but I was told by somebody, can't remember, was it you, Marty, that said it's quite different from his other stuff? That was correct. You know, it was definitely very different, but I really did enjoy it. But I said, you know, how many times can you sing please? Respectfully, Delaney, please, baby, please get out your thesaurus.
All right. Well, can I suggest a track to play that's different? All right.
Yeah.
I want to hear, because this is the one that kind of got my attention. It's the second track on the album. So the album's called Out of My Head. The first song's called Out of My Head. Second song is called Can't Get You Out of My Head, which is also, I think Seeds did a song like that on a kind of a Nuggetsy thing. And this sounds kind of like that, although mixed with Mark Bolan and T-Rex, which I didn't see coming from Delaney Davidson at all. So I got kind of excited about that, because it's like, oh, he's trying something new, because I've been listening to Delaney for a long time, ever since I kind of got here. And so this Can't Get You Out of My Head is definitely something that got my interest. All right, new music from Delaney Davidson. All right, let's open it up to the panel, folks. What do you think?
Number two was my favorite. I thought the bass was stonking on that one.
All right.
And it's got this really full, lush sound. You could tell he's a multi-instrumentalist, not just from that, but disassociation from myself as well. Like, he's got this, he understands how musical instruments are combined in an orchestral way. Like, I thought it was totally worthwhile. There's a bit of Bayou and Heaven Is Falling. And he's got a great voice. You know, that bass to falsetto is really controlled.
Yep.
And yet he sits really comfortable and clear in the mid-range. Like, yeah, I love the strings and Out of My Head. And I can hear in disassociation from myself, sort of a bit of split ends in there too.
Ooh, freaky. All right.
Yeah. Shout out to Phil Judd. It's his birthday today.
There you go. All righty. Good on him. Hey, Chris, do you like this one better than Kaylee Bell?
I sure did. My thoughts with this album, was it was moody, it was menacing, but also quite whimsical. You know, that's that Split Enz connection. Also, like, Nick Cave murder ballads come to mind, like really sunny songs about death. And I thought the arrangements were really cool, like uncluttered, which lent to a sort of lo-fi sound, but the instruments that were there were also really clear. So I still haven't quite got my head around the production aspects of this. Like you, Veronica, I almost wanted a little more from it, but what's there actually makes the record quite unique and effective.
Yes. Yep.
All right. And Graham, did you say you haven't listened to it?
No, I didn't listen to very much. I heard a couple of tracks, that's all. I just didn't have the time. Right. But, you know, like you, Marty, I've been listening to Delaney since I think probably the first things that he did. And one of the things that I always liked about him was that just when you thought you'd pinned him into that dark Tom Waits, Nick Cave kind of area, and thought, oh, yeah, then suddenly there is a pure piece of almost like Beatlemania pop comes up. Screwed up a little bit, obviously, but, you know, the verse chorus is all there. You know, wow, you know, this guy can go all over the map. So from what I've heard, that's pretty much what he's doing, and I'm very happy with that. So I look forward to hearing
it. Veronica, I feel like I jumped in all over your review, so finish it up for me, please.
That's so fine. Honestly, I really like the record. I think it's really unique. It's really interesting. I do think that because Delaney has the ability to kind of dabble in all these different genres, he becomes his own genre, and I think that's pretty awesome. And, you know, he's got a lot of monthly listeners. Like, he's good at what he does. Right. I really like, I don't know, I'm a fan.
Very good. Good old Delaney. Now, we have one more album. Adrienne Lenker has an album called Bright Future, which is, everything's so dark these days. I'm surprised that we have a, anyway. So, Chris, you wanted to hear this and listen to it. You've been looking forward to it. What'd you think?
Really enjoyed this record. I have so much to say about Adrienne Lenker and her band Big Thief.
Yep.
But I'll start by just introducing the new record, Bright Future, which is a surprisingly optimistic album title, because this album has some pretty dark lyrics, and I'm realizing through these conversations how much I enjoy music that is a bit of a bloodletting, like open the wound and explore it and pour it out. So if you want that emotional music, Adrienne Lenker has that for you. But at the same time, her music is also very warm, so she covers the whole emotional spectrum for me in her songwriting. So this album, it was recorded fully analog out in a house in the woods that's like a makeshift studio. It was recorded onto tape, mixed on an analog console, so it's both warm and scratchy and really earthy sounding. It's mostly Adrienne singing and playing her guitar or her piano, but she's accompanied by some friends here. There's some violin, some beautiful backing vocals, second guitars. And they recorded it mostly live. Everyone recorded together without monitoring headphones, and they didn't even listen back to a lot of the takes that said in the little press write-up. They just got the take that had the feel and trusted that the engineer and producer had captured everything. So big daytime sunshine energy and the sound of this record. She said they recorded it in the mornings, in the bedroom of this little studio. So I think a track that captures the feel of this album and of Adrienne solo is the track Ruined. So you can play that one for us, Marty.
Will do.
Until I'm brave enough to call you, I just fall through every time. I wish I'd waved when I saw you, I just watched you passing by. So much coming through every hour too.
fact, that's the last track on the record, isn't it?
It is. That's right.
Okay. So what brought you to that one?
Well, I think the song is it's quite sparse, like a lot of the rest of the record. It's voice and piano, and the chorus is absolutely gorgeous. It's very fragile. It sounds vulnerable, like it's about to crack like thin glass. But the verses are also a little bit meandering and a little bit scratchy. So you both have the really beautiful quality of her voice and her more harsh, abrasive tones, because she doesn't always sing in tune. Right. She sings with feel. But she sings in tune on this record more than her last couple solo records, brings the hooks back.
Excellent. And I also heard some bum notes on the piano on these things, too. You know, just little thing. I don't think it was jazz.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it was, you know, but they, like you say, no. they went for it and they like, that's the take. And I kind of appreciate that. So, yeah. So what else do you recommend we hear on this one?
I would say, I'm going to go with the song Vampire Empire. I'll introduce that track and I'll talk a little bit more about this record, because I think this album makes sense in the context of Adrian Lenker's sort of history and in Big Thief. It needs the context. But Vampire Empire, this was a song that Big Thief actually played on like a Saturday Night Live type show. And the song took off. It went viral. There was no studio recording of it. And so they quickly threw together a band recording. It's one of Big Thief's best songs. But here is the original version of Vampire Empire with its original lyrics that they played on that live show. So there's going to be some interest in this particular track because it's a different arrangement to the studio version from Big Thief.
Watching TV, tired, bleeding on the bed. Expired, all the leaves are dead. I'm not quiet, you've been quiet, just receiving what you said. Reeling, feeding, feelings filled by everything you fed. I see you as you see yourself through all the books you read. Overwhelmed with guilt and realizing the disease. You give me chills, I've had it with the chills. I'm nothing, you are nothing, we are nothing with the pills. I'm empty till she fills.
All righty, that's Adrian Lenker, Vampire Empire. I think that's one of my favorites on the record. Yeah, it's kind of Dylan-esque, if I dare say.
I would absolutely say Dylan-esque, because I want to share some of these lyrics on here too, because they're absolutely captivating. So let me read through just a few of these lines. Watching TV, tired, bleeding on the bed. The milk has just expired. All the leaves are dead. I'm not quiet. You've been quiet. Just receiving what you said. I see you as you see yourself through all the books you've read. It's so good. And a lot of her lyrics, they're easy to pass over until you actually sit down with the lyric sheet. But on repeated listens, they're incredibly moving. So I'm just excited to listen to this record more. There's probably three or four tracks that have jumped out, and I'm stuck on them, and I can't wait to keep listening to this album.
Yep. We talk about the production on all these records, and I'm blown away by the non-production on this record, because it's like you can hear the room in everything that is going on. And there's like little shufflings around and squeaks and echo. It's natural reverb, it sounds like. I think this is a beautiful sounding record myself. So I'm probably my favorite of the four of them. And the songwriting is amazing. So Graham, have you heard it?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely hypnotized by it. Yeah, certainly Bob Dylan is in there. Sadness is a gift. I think, you know, that's almost pure Bob Dylan from about 1965. Yep. And the thing I liked about Vampire Empire is that I just thought, well, this is like she's taken that song or, you know, this is the song that she's done. And it was originally more like Subterranean Homesick Blues. And then when it went to the band, it became something different. So, yeah, I really liked it. And that, I mean, that's a courageous opening track, isn't it? The 6-minute opener on the album where, you know, she talks her way through all of these things. You know, was it, do you remember coming to the hospital when I was 14? My friends
were
spitting. Dad was angry, but you saw everything. You know, and it almost sounds like she's just making this up in the moment. And at 6 minutes long, boy, you know, that's a big ask.
You're right. We need to play some of that for people right now. you're right. When I first heard that, I was like, I was just sucked into this song immediately. Yeah. So let's just play a little. It's called Real House, which is the opening track on Adrian Lenker's Bright Future album.
When I was 7, I saw the first film that made me scared. And I thought of this whole world ending. I thought of dying unprepared. We moved into a real house, a wild field behind it. I wanted to be an inventor, collected scraps to make a portal. I wanted so much for magic to be real.
Yeah, I mean, that one piece. I think, wow, I need to hear the rest of this album. And for also the reasons of the sound of it. And later on, she, you know, coughs at one point. And when I listen to Big Thief albums, the thing about Big Thief albums is they always throw the unexpected at you. You know, you'd be getting a lovely sort of song going on, and then a howl of vocals or, you know, a guitar part will come in. This to me really dials all of that down. Or the dangerous elements of Big Thief are gone, and you just end up focusing entirely on what's being said and the delivery. And it's very intimate, I think.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that just pulls you in, pulls you into the room where it's being recorded, as you said, Marty.
Yep. And I was worried listening to it. I was afraid Veronica was going to break into tears if she listened to it, because she tends to anyway. But Veronica, did you get through this one dry-eyed?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. No, I thought it was really good. And it was interesting knowing that they just, you know, recorded it and then just released it, because when I was listening to it, I thought, has this been recorded like on a dynamic mic in a bedroom? Like I couldn't quite understand. But that being said, very vulnerable, very raw. Reminded me of a really, like, if you made a really sad Melanie Cross, like Helen Reddy kind of vibe. I really like. Yeah, I found it very emotional, but not like, oh, I'm going to sit here and cry, like contemplative, bittersweet, nostalgic, you know, really fascinating artist. Really all enjoyed it.
Andra, do you have anything to add?
I felt about Adrian Lineker the same way that Chris felt about Katie Gell.
Why did I know that? I could tell by your face.
For all the reasons everyone said, like, you know, that the bum notes and the shuffling noises in the background and the production, I'm like, you know, I grew up in recording studios and that stuff's just anathema, you know? Like you I'm listening to it thinking, oh, the raw and the vulnerable, I'm like, oh, a bit whiny, you know? Like,
yes. Some of the deliveries were...
So, like, I absolutely agree with everything you've said, and it's not for me.
That's,
you know?
That's
like,
all right.
Yeah.
So fair. Completely understand.
Yes. I feel like a jerk, but I was just like, oh, no, yeah. I'm not in the right frame of mind for
this. It's fair enough. I will say sometimes certain artists, Big Thief and Adrian Lenker is one of them, where... I need to be in the zone for the voice. There will be entire months that pass where Big Thief can mm-hmm. grate me, like Death Cab for Cutie or the Decemberists or another band, like quite like mm-hmm. sharp voices. But then when I'm in the zone, it's all I want to listen to.
I was thinking when I listened to it, I guess maybe even
Placebo,
the first song.
Great example. Sorry, Graham.
Yes.
Well, I was thinking of Sun Kill Moon. Yeah. And some of those things that he does where he just kind of talks his way through, you know, breaking his leg or taking a morphine or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you can't take my word for it, though, because I'm not a big fan of Bob Dylan.
Oh, well, we have. That's blasphemy.
I know. I'm just like, a bit nasally.
To each his own.
Can I say one more thing about Adrian Lenker that I think is really cool about her? So I think there's like a Neil Young connection here because he recognized about 4 or 5 albums in that he could just record live imperfections and all, and that felt right to him.
Yep.
So the early Big Thief and Adrian Lenker records are way more produced. They're much easier on the ear. The vocal takes are much more refined. And then as her discography progresses, it gets looser and looser. And even in the way that she presents herself physically, you know, she used to be stereotypically like really quite pretty, wore a lot of makeup, long hair, and then as Big Thief is taking off, she shaves her head, she loses a front tooth and doesn't replace it, and she's just a badass. I love her energy, so the looser the better, I say, but I am pleased that she's honed in some hooks.
When you mentioned Neil Young, it made me think of a tune on American Money. Stars and Bars where you can hear the crackling of the fire in the background, and that I forget the name of the song. Wait a minute, Star of Bethlehem, I think it is, and that really intimate vibe, and that's what she's Lovely. Captured on this record, I think, whether you like it or not.
Draws you in.
All righty, well, this is very exciting, and this is why music journalism is important, because you glom onto the people whose tastes you agree with sometimes, or at least you know where they're coming from, and take it from there. So anyway, so those are our four albums. Now, as a topic of conversation post-review, I thought we should talk about the controversy around Ziggy Marley playing at WOMAD and some of the Kiwi artists and other artists who have dropped out of South by Southwest because of political reasons, and whether or not the Ziggy Marley's political something he did in 2018 and sign something has an effect on how you're going to treat his music and whether you should go to his shows or not. So, and Graham, you probably can explain the situation better than I can.
The thing that interests me is some Palestinian artists would drop from WOMAD because of what they say, security issues or something, security concerns.
And there are artists who would play there before.
Yeah, they played there twice, yep. I think. Mm-hmm. Now, you immediately have to think, what the hell is that about? What, that are they going to be the people who are going to cause trouble, or is it going to be other people who come to a concert cause trouble for them? If the latter...
Or is it just racism? Then,
yeah, there is that.
there's so many questions about it. We should put it to Mr. Winston Peters, who would certainly have a snappy, quick, dumb answer for it.
That's what he's good at.
You know, that I didn't know, honestly, I didn't know anything about Ziggy Marley's support for the Israeli, you know, raising funds for the Israeli military. And, you know, some people have been very surprised by that. But, I mean, he is, you know, was it Tribe of Gad? I can't remember, one of the 12 tribes of Israel anyway. And so, you know, his focus is...
And I think he's married to an Israeli woman.
He may well be. I don't know. But you know, his father was, you know, one of the 12 in the 12 tribes and all that kind of thing. So there's a sort of deep, complex religious matters there which people, I don't think, have explored fully. And you know, we get into that area. How, you know, what are we doing here? Are we talking about, you know, Zionism? Are we talking about you know, the Israeli military? Are we talking about Judaism? Or are we just talking about Israel as a whole? It's very, very complicated. I figure this, if you don't want to support those artists, you don't. you know. And if you if that entails a boycott, then you boycott. If you do support them, well, then you do support them. But that one just got really muddy very, very quickly because of the, you know, just because you have slicing an onion really thin on all those issues. The one that I think is, I still think was gobsmacking, if everything I read is true, is stopping the Palestinian group from going. You know, that if you're going to stop a Palestinian group going, surely you're going to stop Ziggy Marley. You can't just not do that. And that was a decision that they made in the WOMAD organization. The South by Southwest, I think, is even, you know, even more strange because it's I had no idea, and I don't think anybody else did until it was raised, that so much of the financing for South by Southwest came from American military.
I didn't see that coming.
No, you know, like, oh, shit, I just thought it was an alternative festival, you know, but if they're getting, what was it, a third, was it? A third of the funding comes from, you know, the military-industrial complex. We have a problem. And I can understand why those people didn't want to go once they found that out. Equally, I can understand why the people who are already there, you know, made the effort to go there. I can understand why, okay, we're here. It's cost us a shitload of money. We're going to play. I think that's an absolutely forgivable position too. You can't, you know, you're just cutting your nose off to spite your face at that point. So I think both parties have made their decision, and they were both right decisions, even though they were seemingly opposing decisions.
Anybody else have anything to say on the subject?
Yeah, I think that if you're going to throw your support behind a political organization, you can expect political fallout from that. And, you know, we do vote with our dollar. We do vote with our attention. We do vote with our time. So to go to those things, pay the money to go, support it, be one of the members of the crowd, all of that stuff throws your weight behind whatever organization is organizing it. And I think if you disagree with, you know, at your core of what those organizations stand for, then withdrawing your dollar or your time or your performance is a valuable and worthwhile thing to do. I absolutely agree with performers being political with their platform. You know, there's a reason for it, and to me it's so obvious that there's, you know, essentially ethnic cleansing going on in Gaza. And it's being annexed. You know, you can't look at a map from, you know, you look at a map of every decade, and it's pretty clear what's going on.
Yep.
Which is not to say that, you know, there isn't oppositional factions within it, as there are in any country. But I think that, you know, of all people, Israel should recognize when ethnic cleansing is happening.
Mm-hmm. All right. Chris or Veronica, have anything to say?
I really, you know, I agree with Graham, you know, like, you're going to do what you're going to do. I understand everybody's sides. I'm not saying that anything is right. I'm just saying, like, it's pretty badass to stick by what you believe in. And I think what a way, you know, because those artists were funded, like, given funding from the New Zealand government to go as well. So that's, like, a pretty big thing to say. Like, I respect that. I also respect, you know, the artist hustle, and if you've paid lots of money to get there, because that's what they don't tell you. Like, yes, I'm playing South by Southwest. You have to pay for yourself to go. You know, like, it's cool, but also it's as Graham said, shit ton of money, right? So I can also understand wanting to play. I mean, I don't know what I would do in that position. I really don't. I think it's a lose-lose.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's interesting hearing everybody's perspective, because I've never thought about it in terms of festivals or events that I'm giving my money and attention to. But in terms of a fan towards an artist, if I strongly disagree with something that an artist I love is doing, it interrupts my ability to connect with the music. Yeah. I see music as like the platform or the portal to the person and to my own self as a listener, as an exploration tool. So when the politics don't align, it hurts the music for me. So I don't have a stance on events or festivals because I've never really thought about it from that angle. So appreciate all of your comments there. But I love it when an artist does take a stand that I agree with and I'll get behind that.
Well, that you answered the question I was going to get posed before I even asked it, which was kind of, can you separate the artist from their politics or their personal life? Have you ever been disappointed by a favorite artist and then stopped listening to them, that kind of thing? You know,
I have. I mean, I do stand-up comedy, and I grew up listening to my dad's comedy records, and I can tell you I don't listen to Bill Cosby's one anymore.
There you go. That's...
there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's not funny. It's just not funny now.
It is not.
No.
Three of my favorite artists on the planet, a band brand new, the artist Ryan Adams and Sunkill Moon, Mark Kozelek. I still have found my way back to their art, but it took a really long time to sort out whether it felt like the music was still authentic, particularly for Ryan Adams, because all his music is so emotional and about relationships. It made him feel inauthentic knowing how terribly he's treated people. But it's also when it's so caught up in politics and media or different movements where the boundaries quite haven't been defined. You know, it's still such a hot topic that the nuances haven't been fully explored. It's a challenging space as a fan. So I find I've just had to take a break from a lot of those artists and work my way back in slowly.
Ryan Adams is a good example because I've seen him be a complete jerk on stage here in Auckland.
Hey, I was at that show too.
And on a personal note, just doing an interview with him where he was a jerk as well. And then I have seen him do beautiful shows, and he's made some fantastic, written some great songs, made some beautiful records. So what do you do with that? You know, do you cancel him completely? Because that's kind of what happened to him. And
you kind of accept he's an unstable person, you know, as all the clues were there. It shouldn't be a surprise, hey, that he's a bit feisty and not fully stable.
I'm not even sure feisty is the right word. He's just kind of a jerk. Well, anybody else have anything to say before we wrap this rascal up?
I was just going to say thank you very much, Marty. I think this is a very interesting forum to, you know, for people to discuss issues, you know, not just albums, but as we've just seen, what we're talking about then. So, yeah, it's a good forum, Marty. Congratulations on getting it together.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you guys.
Thank
it's all of us doing this together. So that's what it's all about. And I thought I'd leave while we're talking, let's leave with some music from Vera Ellen. She's the one who kind of took a stand, not going to South by Southwest. And personally, I'm behind the whole thing. So we'll say thank you, Vera, and Georgia and the rest of the folks who took a stand and pulled out of that.
We salute you.
All right. Very good. Thank you guys. We'll talk to you again next week. I knew how.